couple of years. Well, no, in a couple of years. But maybe 3 years ago, we applied for an Ash Institute Award out of Harvard University, and it's, I think it's the Ash Institute for Innovations in Government or something along those lines.
Okay.
And, you know, if you've got an innovative program, if it's a nonprofit, you need to be a partner with a government organization.
Mm-hmm.
So in our case, we're a partner with the Onondaga County Department of Social Services.
Mm-hmm.
You apply and they'll give you an award if you're one of the most innovative programs in one particular area or another. So we made, the 1 year we applied, we made the next to last cut. So we actually got through two or three rounds before we got, we got in the newspaper and so forth. So for that year, we were one of the 50 most innovative programs in the country, and then we didn't go on to the next cut. We'll probably apply again, but anyway, for whatever that's worth, I thought I'd mention.
Is that in the Kennedy School, or who runs that, or is it?
You know, I don't know. I don't know, but if you were to Google Ash Institute, you'd find it. The chairperson or whatever of the institute, I think, is David Gergen, who's some politico who's worked in any number of administrations, and he's a talking head on CNN and other places.
Gotcha. Well, let's talk about it. How did Parent Success Initiative begin?
The Parent Success Initiative began as kind of a fledgling idea in 1996, in the mid-90s, welfare reform was a big deal. And in 96, Clinton passed his big Welfare Reform Act. And one of the issues with welfare reform at the time, it was hugely controversial, as you remember, and some people thought it was too draconian. They included, time limits and work requirements and all that sort of stuff. And I think they had gone through, Clinton had vetoed several permutations before he got to something that he was willing to go with, but even then, he still had advisors, resigning and all that stuff over the whole thing. They knew that the work supports in the original bill, and I forget the exact name of the bill, Personal Responsibility and Work Act or something like that. They knew that the work requirements were tough and that there weren't enough supports to assist people in meeting those work requirements. So in 97, Clinton got passed through Congress the Welfare to Work Act, which was $3 billion. I mean, it's a huge amount of money for any kind of program. I think 75% and the money was geared towards helping states and communities develop work programs to help people move from welfare to work.
Mike?
Yeah?
Hi, it's Wendy.
Yes. So
you're saying in 1997 it was a separate act?
Right, and it passed. It was part of the Omnibus Budget Act or something. Or it was part of the Balanced Budget Act of 1997. Anyway, $3 billion. Most of it, I think, about 75% of it was meant to go directly to the states for the states to distribute through state agencies and so forth. But there was 25%, which, whatever 25% of $3 billion is a lot of money, that organizations, nonprofit organizations or even state agencies or whatever, could apply for directly to the U.S. Department of Labor. Because they were interested at the time in finding out what worked. So I don't recall that they were called demonstration projects, but because they didn't use that terminology, but that's what they essentially were demonstration projects. And since it was so much money, I think they said from up front they knew they were going to do I think, three rounds, multiple rounds of funding. So, welfare reform or welfare to work was an issue that we were talking about in this community as well, even before the Welfare to Work Act thing passed in August of 97. There had been a group that was brought together by the Community Foundation. Well, actually, it wasn't so much that they were brought together. The Community Foundation had put out an RFP for welfare to work, you know, to give out money to assist agencies in town through welfare to work services. And they, I forget how much money was available, but it wasn't, you know, a huge amount of money. But they got a lot of applications. So they brought in, and at the time I was working at the Brighton Family Center, and we were starting up a jobs program, an employment program, which we were calling Job Connection. And so I had put in an application to the Community Foundation to help fund Job Connection. And I think at that point we had just gotten some little bit of dollars to actually start up the program. So we just started running an employment program. So anyway, at the Brighton Family Center. So anyway, what the Community Foundation decided to do, since they got all these applications, was to bring in all the applicants and have a conversation with them to see what the priorities were, what people really needed. Because since they had a limited amount of money, they thought it made more sense to fund something that was going to be of benefit to everybody, as opposed to, we'll just fund these two applications, even though we have 15 applications or something like that. They wanted to create a way that create something that was going to give them more bang for the buck, and perhaps build some capacity in the community to provide these sorts of services. So this was the first time a lot of us had actually met, because clearly everybody was interested. Lots of agencies were interested in employment services.
Was that just naturally, or was that because of the tenor of the times?
I think a lot of it had to do with the tenor of the times. It was a big deal back then, and people wanted to get on board. And they knew that their clientele needed jobs. I mean, the times were a-changing, and we knew we needed to make a difference in terms of employment. And that was true with Job Connection as well. I mean, we were doing this, we started this long before the Community Foundation started talking about it, but in my conversations with other agencies on the South Side, we knew, you know, people needed jobs, so let's figure out a way to help them get jobs. Anyway. So my guess is those sorts of conversations and thoughts were happening all over the city. So all of us came together under the rubric of the Community Foundation. And I don't remember all the specifics, but probably after a couple of meetings, we decided that the best way for the community, or recommended or whatever, consensed, that the best way for the Community Foundation to spend their money was to fund an agency which turned out to be the RLS Career Center.
RLS?
Career Center.
What's the RLS?
RLS in the old days stood for Regional Learning Service, but at that point they were just using RLS as RLS, kind of the same way like KFC dropped Kentucky Fried Chicken and just went with KFC.
Gotcha.
So anyway.
Consensed.
Right, so we consensed, and RLS was funded to do a series of train-the-trainer workshops. So agencies could sort of learn about, get better trained on how to do employment services. Since none of us were experts in employment services, none of us had actually done it. So I don't, probably if I scrounged around, I could find the some stuff from those days. But my guess is, you know, it did something like, you know, how do you help people find jobs? How do you, you know, how do you do job development? How do you do job readiness? How do you help people write a resume? That it was probably pretty basic stuff.
How did they come across? Was there literature on that out there?
Well, they RLS was an agency that had done that sort of work, so they were perfectly what's the word I'm looking for? They were perfectly set up to do that, because they were running a displaced homemakers program. They did some corporate work, so they already had an expertise in doing that kind of work. They were a career center, so their staff was already either able to do those sorts of training or in a position to get people to do those sorts of trainings. So it made perfect sense for them to do that. Anyway, so that was the beginning of a lot of relationship building. And, you know, oddly enough, a lot of the agencies that were around that table don't exist anymore. But if I recall correctly, Jim Dessauer was there from ENIP. Richard Schwartz was there from NESCO. You know, and NESCO was an interesting organization because it was brand new, and it was a collaboration of five, I think, faith communities over on the east side. And that would, you know, Catholic, Jewish, Protestant, and I think even, at some point NESCO included a mosque. I don't know if it did to begin with. But they were formed, NESCO standing for the Near East Side Community Development Organization. Community and development having a dash between it to connect it so you could get the NESCO acronym. And their whole purpose for being, like Job Connection, we were sort of parallel. Job Connection was on the south side, NESCO was over on the east side, and we're doing essentially the same sorts of stuff. And these five congregations got together and formed this nonprofit, NESCO, to provide employment services to people in their congregations, or to the neighborhoods that their congregations were located in. So that's where Richard Schwartz came in. Near East Side Adventures. I'm sorry, not Near East Side Adventures. Like I said, ENIP, East Side Neighbors in Partnership, Consolidated Industries was around the table. And Consolidated Industries was a major player in doing... and they had a sheltered workshop over on the north side, and actually over on the west side too, although at some point the west side one closed. I don't know if it was closed by the time we started this or not. I think it closed after we started this. But they were a sheltered workshop, and they'd been working with people with disabilities for years on unemployment issues, and were just beginning to get into welfare to work, and had were probably one of the first agencies to have welfare to work contracts with the county. The county was also, they had started their Jobs Plus program right around the same time. So the Onondaga County was well ahead of the curve when it came to welfare reform and providing employment services. And that's an important key aspect of this, which will come into play later on. And there was also the Private Industry Council at the time, or the PICS, and they were essentially sort of the what today we would call a one-stop. And they would have a lot of employer they would provide a lot of employer relationships Not provide. They had a lot of employer relationships, and if anybody at the time wanted to go, needed help of finding a job, although they were mostly dealing with higher-end folks, meaning more middle class and so forth, they would go to the PIC. So around the table were these nonprofits, and I'm sure there were much more than I'm recalling right now, as well as the county, as well as the PIC.
So county, meaning Jobs Plus?
Jobs Plus, yeah.
Who is that?
Jobs Plus is run by, Jobs Plus is a partnership between the Onondaga County Department of Social Services and OCC. So I forget who was around the table at the time. Actually, person around the table at the time for, I don't know if right at the beginning, but at some point, was Joanne Correa, who P.S. was also one of the original IH people.
Oh, okay.
from the 60s. She works for the city now. She's a grant writer for the city now. But at the time, she was working for Jobs Plus. And David Sukowy, Commissioner of Social Services, then and now. And then Frank Lazarski was around the table, who was then the executive director of the Private Industry Council. Today he's the executive director of the United Way.
Was Pat Higgins there?
Pat Higgins was probably there, yeah. Probably some combination of Pat Higgins and Janice Main. And I don't know if Pat is still involved in Jobs Plus. I don't think she is. I know Janice is still at Jobs Plus. Other agencies around the table, probably the Spanish Action League. The Rose Center was there. Probably the Urban League was there. So many who would later become PSI agencies were around that table.
Okay.
And many of them don't exist anymore.
Right, like ENIP is gone.
ENIP is gone, RLS is gone.
Oh, RLS is gone.
Yeah, the Urban League is gone, NESCO is gone, even Job Connection is essentially gone.
It's not being run anymore.
Well, there's got one part-time staff person sort of working on it out of the Southside Resource Center, so it's not...
So not Norm at all?
No, well, Norm works for me.
He works here?
Yeah, he works here.
He moved
here.
Over. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. And I forget who the other person was.
Sharon Patterson. Sharon. She's still there. And anyway, she's doing it sort of part-time. Because, they lost incredible amounts of funding.
Did they? So they've lost.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's, that sort of, there's, that whole story sort of fits into the rest of it. Because, here in 1996, there's this big focus, 1996, 97, 98, big focus on welfare to work dollars, big deal locally and across the nation. By the time the Bush administration starts and they change their priorities, employment, and even in this community, employment is no longer a priority. And therefore, dollars started drying up big time. Which is why a lot of these agencies are closed. A lot of these programs don't exist anymore. But I'm getting way ahead of myself. I just went to chapter 15, and I'm still on chapter 1.
A little foreshadowing is always good.
Yeah. Okay. In any case, and I know this is all a little confusing, but so let me just say again, and then I'll move on. Let me summarize where we're at, and then move on to the next step. So we've got this group of agencies who are interested in employment services. They've under the auspices of the Community Foundation, they've met, and they've agreed to at least this mini collaboration around. Getting staff trained on how to do employment services.
Can I just, who's at the Community Foundation? How did they get hooked onto this? They're interested.
You know, I don't know. My guess is they offered the RFP, or I don't remember. They offered the RFP because it was welfare to work was the big thing then. Or it might have been. It might have been that this was just part of their normal round of applications, and I think. So my memory is now kicking in a little bit here. My guess is. Was part of their normal round of applications, and all of a sudden they noticed they got a half a dozen, however many applications for welfare to work. So it might have been, it probably wasn't that they said, okay, welfare to work is important, therefore we're going to put out an RFP to generate welfare to work proposals. I think it was more, it was probably more along the lines of, we were all starting to do this work in the community, we all happened to put in applications for the same types of services, at least broadly speaking, to the community foundation, and then they noticed that and said, "Wait a minute, let's respond. We need to respond to this need." But let's do this in a smarter fashion rather than just choosing one or two applications. I think that was more. I feel sorry for the person. Who's going to be transcribing this? My apologies to whoever you
no,
are.
No, this is great. This is rich data.
Because it's going to be confusing. So that's probably more along the line. That's a very good question. And I forget the people who were involved at the time. There was a woman who had worked at the Community Foundation for quite some time and who retired soon there, probably not long after these meetings. She was replaced by Helen Dewey. And I remember Helen because we were both Maxwell people. She was, I think she graduated from the MPA program a year or two after I did. In any case, and while she was a student, she had actually done a project for Brighton Family Center. So that's how I got to know Helen.
Community Foundation, is that, where do they get funding? Is that a private charity?
Or? Yeah, I mean, it's a foundation, so they solicit donations, and they work off of endowment dollars.
Okay.
Gotcha. I mean, I don't think they have a huge deal, but they're one of the two big foundations in this community. There's actually a third one that I can't remember, but I think they and the Gifford Foundation are the two big foundations in Syracuse. The director... then and now, although I think if she hasn't retired yet, she's about to retire, is Peggy Ogden. And I don't know if she would remember any of this stuff because she was sort of peripherally involved.
So they put out general annual RFPs for, are there any projects you want us to fund?
They may have changed their system since then. I haven't really kept up with it, but my recollection was at the time, you know, they had this cycle like every 6 months or something along those lines. You could apply. Again, I don't remember the specifics, but that's how most foundations, or a lot of foundations operate.
And it could be for different things, and they just noticed a trend.
Right. And I mean, they have particular each. Foundation has a particular focus, so I'm sure we fit into this sort of work, fit into whatever the Community Foundation's focus was at the time. I just, again,
sure,
haven't thought about a lot of this stuff in a long time. So anyway, so we got that money, we're doing the train the trainer stuff, and we know that the and I'm not sure. I have a recollection that one of the first meetings took place in June of 1997. I don't remember when the trainer stuff started. It probably wasn't planned to start until the fall, would be my guess. They passed the Balanced Budget Act in August. So that, and we knew that there was 25% of $3 billion available. So that was happening at the same time we were having these meetings. So eventually, you know, I think there was some discussion about, well, let's, and I think I was one of the people who was pushing this the hardest, because I was really, I mean, part of my motivation was that I had this little tiny employment program going, and I wanted more money to expand it. So, you know, and I knew we weren't going to, the only way we were going to be able to pull down welfare to work dollars out of the feds was if we were doing it collaboratively in the community. So, it was, so I'm sure I was one of the people who pushed to get, to keep us meeting and to discuss how we can move forward, how we can apply for one of these grants. So I remember sitting in on once the legislation was signed, I remember sitting in on national conference calls, which were talking about, and although I'm not sure how they managed to get this up, and I may be thinking about this in a more compressed time frame than it actually took place in, but at some point or another, I remember sitting in on conference calls, talking about how to go about applying for the money and so forth. I mean, it's not usually that one day they pass the legislation and the next day they've got it all figured out as to how they're going to do the RFP process. So there was probably a lag time that I'm not factoring in, but. So anyway, we for whatever the period of time was, we kept meeting and agreed to go ahead and apply for some of these dollars. Now, it was a complicated process because the meetings kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and the turf battles kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So there was it was a lot to manage, and I remember being right, you know, in the middle of it, trying to figure out, okay, how do we keep this one happy and that one happy, and how do we make all this, you know, make all this happen? Because then there was the, you know, I had to deal with the internal politics of my own agency, Catholic Charities, which operated Brighton Family Center, as well as dealing with this new, the politics of this new group that was forming, as well as the politics of the established relationships between agencies who were already either working together or competing with each other.
Were these geographic competitions or sort of terrain, you know, type of service, or both?
Probably both. Let me talk a little bit about the content, what the feds were looking for. You know, I don't think they were necessarily looking for geographic parity. I think they were willing to fund the best applications that they got, but they were going to whatever their geographic, they might have had different kinds of priorities that they were going to sort out when they actually got the applications. Like, I think in the end, I think there were a bunch in New York State, but only two or three outside of New York City. I don't know how it balanced out over the rest of the country. So while I'm sure geography was a factor in their decisions, I don't think it was the primary factor. I don't think they were looking to make sure that the money got spread out evenly across the country. They were looking for several different categories, and I don't remember what all the categories were. But there were, you could apply in different categories. Somewhere I probably do have that information, probably in that box over there. Anyway, whatever, there are probably like four or five or six categories that you could apply in. Most of those categories, you would be serving some portion of the population that was already being served by state welfare agencies using TANF dollars, Temporary Aids to Needy Families, which was the primary funding that was used for welfare cash assistance, what used to be, prior to that point, what used to be AFDC.
Did that come with the 1996 legislation or with the balanced budget?
AFDC turned into TANF right. in the 1996 legislation.
Right.
That's where it moved from being an entitlement to a block grant.
Mm-hmm. So that money was from the 1996, separate from what you're going after the 25%.
Right. But if we were going to be serving, but you know, you could serve. States were serving people with TANF dollars, and they were doing employment services and things like that with those TANF dollars. Most of the money. Most of the categories in the welfare to work legislation would allow you to serve populations that were already being served under TANF. Just you would have additional dollars for additional dollars for employment services for those populations. There was a final category that would allow you to work with non-custodial parents. And these were general non-custodial parents of children who were receiving TANF benefits. So the non-custodial parent himself, the person who was actually getting the services, would not necessarily be on TANF, probably wasn't on TANF, but the kid that he or she wasn't living with was on TANF. So the idea was to help this guy earn money so he could start paying child support and therefore offset the dollars that were being used, the TANF dollars that were being used to support his kids.
Mm-hmm.
So those were the categories. Again, I don't really remember the other categories, but the non-custodial parent one was the one that turned out to be the key one for us. Now, keep in mind, you know, to talk about local politics, keep in mind that there were a couple of other things about this legislation. One, if you were going to, or these grants, if you were going to apply, and keep in mind this is part of the 25%, if you were going to apply for one of these competitive grants, and that's what they were called, competitive grants. You had to get sign-off from the Private Industry Council. So we were constantly lobbying, you know, we were trying to build a relationship with Frank Lazarsky because we couldn't put in an application unless we got his imprimatur, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Frank was not a stupid man. He knew that Jobs Plus was already in existence,
mm-hmm.
and that they were doing work
mm-hmm.
with basically welfare to work with low income populations, and that if the PIC locally tried to do anything with these dollars, he'd essentially be duplicating what was already happening through Jobs Plus. So Onondaga County got a waiver from the feds, and there are only two counties in the state that got this waiver or asked for this waiver. One is Onondaga County and the other one was New York City. Got a waiver from the feds to allow the county to be the welfare to work point agency as opposed to the PIC.
Oh.
So, in the end, as it turned out, we couldn't, since they got that waiver, the person that we needed to court turned out not to be Frank Lazarsky and the PIC, but rather David Sukowy and Onondaga County Department of Social Services.
Hmm.
So we couldn't go forward without David Sukowy's imprimatur.
Okay, well now why was that prudent on Lazarsky's part?
Well, he wasn't really dealing with welfare to work population. So it would, I mean, I guess you'd have to ask him this question, but, well, remember how I said that there was 75% of the money that was going to the states, yep. that was essentially formula dollars that were determined, you know, based on, I guess, population and so forth. New York State would get so much, and then that would filter down to each county.
Oh.
Those dollars would have filtered into the PIC.
Mm. Every state has, every county has a PIC, and
every county has a PIC
in every state in New York, in the U.S.
Pretty much, or at the time, yes. Now they're called WIBs.
Is that from the 1998 Workforce Investment Act? They changed.
Yeah, it's from Workforce. Yeah.
Okay.
That's exactly right.
So the PIC it pre-existed that.
Yes.
But was changed.
Right. WIB didn't happen until a few. Yeah, like you said, 1998 later. And then I don't think this county got up to speed on that until a few years after that.
Okay.
But I don't remember all this stuff. So it made much more sense. And maybe it was the county's idea and not the PIC's idea. I don't know what negotiation happened there, but there had to have some negotiation had to go on. But again, don't forget, Onondaga County was way ahead of the curve on welfare to work. They had already set up Jobs Plus, and Jobs Plus had been running for a couple of years. So it made much more sense for the formula dollars to flow directly to the Department of Social Services so they could use it to support whatever they were doing with Jobs Plus than it would have been for the money, the formula dollars for welfare to work to flow to the PIC and then flow over to Jobs Plus or for the PIC to set something up separate from Jobs Plus. It just didn't make any sense, and it was probably more of a hassle to do it that way. So that would be my guess as to why they just to keep everything neat and clean and logical.
Mm-hmm.
So that they just made the point agency in this county the Department of Social Services. That for us, that meant David was our point person. Onondaga County was our point person. So we had all these meetings, and what do we want to? We want to apply for this grant. Yes, we know we want to apply for this grant. What sort of services do we want to provide? And there was lots of discussion about that. And we went to David, and he basically said to us, and he was very clear about this. This was over several meetings. I mean, I can't tell you how many of these meetings took place. There were tons of them. David essentially said, Jobs Plus is already working with all these other populations that are TANF eligible. So it makes no sense for you guys to be duplicating what we're already doing. So here's this other category. We want you to start working with if you're going to do this application, we want you to start working with non-custodial parents. And we all looked at him, like, what's a non-custodial parent? And knowing full well that was going to be a huge challenge. And we really didn't want to do it. So we, David held his ground. We kept going back and forth about it and kept trying to finagle different ways of trying to work with more traditional populations and more traditional, welfare populations. But he held his ground, so we said, okay, we'll work on non-custodial parents.
Mm-hmm.
None of us having a real clue as to exactly what that was going to entail or having any experience in working with non-custodial parents. And thinking it was going to be really tough. I mean, I can't remember. I think anytime you said that to somebody, they would say, oh, boy, that's going to be a tough population. In the back of their minds and saying to themselves, I really don't want to work with that population. Anyway, but was David's call, and if we wanted to put in something, we wanted to get some money for our community, for our agencies, that's what we were going to have to do. So, I don't exactly remember when the first round of applications were due to the feds. probably late 1997 or early 1998. I don't remember. Don't quite remember. But we had tried to put in an application, and we couldn't pull it off. We just didn't have the time. We didn't have the... We just didn't have it together. We didn't have our coalition together to do that.
And you're all doing full-time...
And we're all, we've got other... I mean, one of the big issues, too, was trying to figure out who was going to be the lead agency. Who was actually going to receive the dollars and then spread it out. So the only way we could... And that was... I don't remember how long it took us to decide on that, or to resolve that issue. But that was a major sticking point. You know, even before you start arguing about services and where are they going to what are they going to be and where are they going to be. It was sort of like who's going to get the money. Mm-hmm. And so there was this big issue about who do we trust in the community to be able to do this, because every agency has trust issues with every other agency. So we eventually decided that the agency that was going to be the lead agency had to agree not to provide services. Basically, it just had to be the overseer agency. Mm-hmm. And that left a lot of people out, because most people wanted to provide services. Mm-hmm. Because they were either, like in our case, I didn't want Catholic Charities to be the lead agency, because I wanted us to be able to provide the service, the employment services, to our clientele in our neighborhoods. If we couldn't provide the services, then what was the point? Mm-hmm. So eventually, I don't remember how BOCES got around the table. Mike Irwin and Gail Sandel would probably be able to remember that better. But they were around the table. So it was eventually decided, and I think I had one of the initial conversations with Mike Irwin about this. It was eventually decided or agreed to that BOCES would be the lead agency. They were okay with it. They were okay with it, with not providing services, and they had a big enough agency that they could handle. I mean, we knew it was going to be a multi-million-dollar grant, so they had the capacity to be able to deal with that kind of those kinds of dollars.
So they would get administrative funding, would go to them.
Right, mm-hmm. And then they would then distribute out, they would do the subcontracts with all the other agencies who were providing services.
So the fear about having someone who was also providing services was they might favor their own services or give more money to those or be like, okay.
Right, there was an inherent conflict of interest. Gotcha. There.
Mm-hmm.
Which is absolutely true. Mm-hmm. It makes perfect sense, and I think it was the right way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And BOCES and Mike Irwin in particular... did a good job of making that happen. But again, moving ahead. So we got all that stuff. I mean, it took months to get all this stuff resolved. But even though we did not finally put in an application in the first round, we got through the process of deciding who the lead agency was going to be. And if we ever got this grant, ever put in another one, and what population we were going to serve. I mean, those were two huge hurdles.
Mm-hmm.
And we agreed that even though we didn't put one in this time, that we were going to continue to work together and build a collaboration that would be the foundation for making a successful competitive grant application. And so we did that. We we gave ourselves a name, called ourselves Greater Syracuse Works, and we kept meeting on a regular basis to come up with bylaws and, you know, priorities and a mission statement and all that kind of stuff. And somewhere around here is I probably have minutes of all those sorts of meetings, but we did finally, we kept together, kept meeting, kept talking, kept building relationships and infrastructure and so forth, and I would guess sometime in 1998 put in the second round of the competitive grants, put in an application, which was not accepted. And we kept going and meeting, and when round three came up, which was probably sometime in the early part of 1999, we put in another application. And just as an aside, when we were working on the first application, as a matter of fact, I remember it was right before the IH 30th reunion. 35th reunion. Because there were probably four or five of us who were involved in, who were at various stages of having been involved in IH, who were around the table writing that grant. So when we went to the reunion, we were all there. So anyway, it's neither that sort of an aside, but yeah. So that first grant probably went in the middle of 1998, June 1998 was probably about right. So that was turned down, and so then the second one, or for the final round, the third round, we put in another application that had to be sometime in the spring of 1998, maybe the early summer. And that one we were awarded. I think we got the notification in September of 1999.
How was that process of being rejected? How did that feel to people? How did people react to that?
You know, I honestly don't remember. I'm sure we were dejected. But we did make it a point to get our score sheet, so we could see what areas we needed to improve on. And I do remember going to in preparation for the third round, I do remember Mike Irwin and I going to a session in New York City for how to put together one of these successful applications. So we were really quite strategic about it. I mean, they were very, the feds, the Department of Labor, were very helpful about putting out very specific information about what they were looking for. And we did our best to stick to give them exactly what they wanted. So doing that second round was useful in the sense that we were able to use that to make an improved third round application, and I think if I remember correctly, over time they changed some of their criteria as well, or they tried to streamline some of the things that they were looking for, so it made a little bit more sense. You know, I mean, it was at the time it was making sure that you were. I remember being very immersed in the minutiae of the grant and the RFP, and none of which I remember right now, but really trying to make sure we hit all the, you know, crossed all the T's, dotted all the I's that they were looking for. You know, I'm sure after we were denied the first time, or denied at the second round, we were dejected, but we did put in the third round application, so we were at least persistent enough. And determined enough to go for it again, and in the end, it paid off.
It seems just like a long time, you know, over 3 years, sort of, or, well, 2 years.
Yeah, it's probably more like 2 years, because if we started with the original Community Foundation thing in the early part, or the middle part of 1997, and we didn't get the third round grant until probably September of 99, so yeah, about 2 years from the very beginnings to the actual awarding of a grant.
But it seemed, I mean, that's a long time to do work that for which nobody's really compensated.
Yeah, that was foremost in our minds.
And there was a lot of
bullshit that went along with it.